Blog Talk Radio.
Well, I've had one too many.
In the past, I've been a gnat. They weren't kidding when they called me, well, a witch. But you find that nowadays, I've mended all my ways, repented, seen the light, and made a switch to thee. And I fortunately know a little magic. It's a talent that I always have possessed. And dear lady, please don't laugh. I use it on behalf of the miserable, lonely, and depressed. Poor unfortunate soul, in pain, in need. This one longing to be thinner, this one wants to get the girl, and do I help them? Yes, indeed. Those poor unfortunate souls, so sad, so true. They come flocking to my calls and crying, tell them and appease, and I help them. Yes, I do. Now it's happened once or twice. Someone couldn't pay the price, and I'm afraid I had to rake him across the coals. Yes, I've had the odd complaint, but on the whole, I've been a saint to those poor unfortunate souls. Now here's the deal, if you dare, there's a potion I'll prepare. Just consume and you'll be human, see how days up above. By the end of day three, listen up, this is key. Just convince Mr. Prince and get a kiss of true love.
If I do?
Lucky you, you stay human through and through. You can go wedge your bow and be totally divine.
And if not?
Then guess what, girl, you turn back into a mer-girl. Same as you once were, girl, but that tail will be mine. Don't be shy, dear. What will it be? You want the guy, dear? Leave it to me.
But what about my father and my family?
Sorry, dear. There's no way to spin it. Life's full of tough choices, isn't it? One last thing. Silly me. Did I mention there's a T? Nothing choice, just a voice. No more talking, singing, zip.
Not a word?
Not a note. Not a whisper from your throat.
But just
a smile. You'll be fine, honey. Here's a little tip. You have your looks, your pretty face, and don't forget to underestimate the importance of body language. Ha ha! Woo-hoo-hoo-hoo! Yeah! The men up there don't like a lot of blabber. They think a girl who gossips is a bore. And on land, it's much preferred for ladies not to say a word. And after all, dear, what is idle prattle for? Come on, you poor unfortunate soul! Go ahead! Your choice. I'm a very busy woman and I haven't got all day. It won't cost much. Just your voice. Your poor unfortunate soul. So sad, but true. If you want to cross the bridge, my sweet, you've got to pay the toll. Take a gulp, take a breath, and go ahead and sign the scroll. Blossom, jetsam, now I gotta work. The boss is on a roll. You poor
Hello and welcome to Part Sinner, Part Saint. Good and evil are not black and white. We all have a mix of naughty and nice. Poetry allows us to explore our dark side and find our way to the light. We celebrate people who, like the founder of the show, recognize they are on a dangerous path and make the difficult adjustment to being an amazing person. Share poems that reveal the duality of our vulnerability and strength. Capture the internal battle of demon and angel on your shoulders. Deep poetry, thoughtful commentary, and fun chatter for sinners, saints, and everyone in between. I am Pam Ray, co-hosting with me tonight and filling in for our regular host, Afasiana, is Victoria Frost. Victoria and I are poets on a website called All Poetry with a group of poets called Late Night Poets. Now, you don't have to belong to the group or the website to call in, to share, to listen, and enjoy, but it is highly recommended. I also recommend that you check out the poetry anthologies that Late Night Poets has on sale on at Amazon, because when you purchase those, you not only get amazing poetry, you help support these radio shows. And for tonight's radio show, Afasiana ran a contest with artwork done by Amanda Lee Dada, and her artwork is colored pencil drawings of Disney characters, but what she does is she puts the villain and the hero or heroine in one face. So they, each one takes up a half of the face. For example, we have Alice in Wonderland with the Queen of Hearts. We have Sleeping Beauty with Maleficent. There's just a bunch of different options and characters that are represented. And it's really cool prompts, and I'm definitely looking forward to delving into tonight's poetry and reading and commenting. And hello, Victoria. How's it going?
It's good. I'm excited to be here. Sad that Faze isn't, because every night spent with Faze is always awesome when we're on these shows. But I'm excited to be here. And I'm super excited about this prompt. I love this idea. So, yeah.
I really like how it reflected on the duality of our nature, like that it could be taken, metaphorically, but you didn't have to actually write about the characters. Well, you could simply just write about the thoughts and emotions that came to your mind when you looked at the concept of the art.
Oh, absolutely. It actually reminded me a little bit of the TV show that went on, I don't know if it's still going on, but Once Upon a Time? TV show?
Oh my goodness. I loved Once Upon a Time. Me and my two oldest bonded over that show.
It was a great show. But what I love about it too is that it showed that the evil queen wasn't always evil and they're redeemable. And I think, at least for me, this contest really kind of speaks of that sometimes people become evil not because they were born that way, and some people can be redeemed. So I love it. I love this concept. I think this is great.
Absolutely. And I should give people a heads up that you and I will also be filling in for Afasiana for next week's show, but she does have a contest running for it. So people should definitely check that out. And
absolutely.
Yes. And I've gone ahead and I've brought Jeremy and Felon on. So hello, Jeremy, and hello, Felon. Glad you could both be here.
Hey, guys.
You are sounding much better, Felon. How are you doing?
I'm hanging in there. I'm hanging in there.
Good.
That's good.
And how
I'm
are
glad
you
to hear
doing?
It. Good to hear you.
Thank you.
Hey, everybody. How are you doing tonight?
We're good.
Hey,
Jeremy. How are you?
Good. I feel a little bit of a loss. I like to get the opening song in so I can kind of get in the spirit of the night, but I missed it tonight. It looks like it's something from The Little Mermaid. Pam, can you sing me a little bit of what I might have missed?
No, but nice try.
I'm going to get you one of these times.
Yeah, someday.
Souls. Daggone it.
Well, shall we start off tonight?
Absolutely. Let's go ahead, and I'm just going to start with, we can't do that. I was about to repost the Ursula GIF, and that would not have made much sense.
Jeremy did want to know what the opening song was about. It might be appropriate.
I just want to hear it.
Did it go quiet all of a sudden?
It did.
I'm on mute.
Jeremy killed the conversation.
I'm here.
All right, all right. Well, let me go ahead. I'm going to grab your right, Felon, and you can give it a read for us and then hopefully hang out as long as your health allows.
Yeah, I'm going to try to send you as long as I can, but I can't make any promises. But I picked prompt 4, and I think it's Snow White and her evil stepmother, who was the queen, and it's called Pure Snow. Innocence or evil, one spawns from purity only to the characterizations in their wrongs. Youth unable to develop a jealous bone, free to time's curse, living reckless. Lines upon the skin lay upon the softness of a girlish grin. Bitterness reflects an image aging will soon come to wreck. Wrinkles are grace mirrored by the collecting face. Right eye wilting is on the surface. Stunning is finding one's self-purpose. End poem.
This is such an amazing write, Felon. I'm actually going to steal the first comment on this. Because what I love about this is that you really hit on that point that no one is born evil. No one is born in these positions that they find themselves. Instead, it's how their life is kind of defined. Sometimes it's because other people have determined that they're evil, that their wrongs are more important than their rights. And that could be what happened with Snow White's stepmother, the evil queen. But I really love how you even show how the heart is eroded further when the things that we value are lost. Youth unable to develop, a jealous bone free, to time's curse, living reckless. This idea of Snow White, who was born into privilege, who didn't have to worry about her faults because she already was at the top of society. And yet here the stepmother has these lines upon her face. She wishes to retain that youth, that beauty. She believes that she's the fairest of them all. And yet, as each line comes collected on her face, it becomes so utterly bitter. Another reason to hate someone who has the one thing that she has left, until finally she's floating on the surface and losing her self-purpose. I think that's so stunning. And it speaks to where we place our values, where we place the things that fulfill us. And if we consistently seek that which is always slipping away, we will never find fulfillment and we'll die probably pretty sad, unfulfilled, and bitter. I think this is such a stunning write on the progression of it all and just that testament to where even your values can impact the quality of life. Just a stunning piece, Felon.
Oh,
thank you for sharing this.
Excellent comment.
Excellent poem. And Jeremy, what do you think of this?
Yeah, Fel, you have a number of things going on here that I was really taken aback by that I really kind of enjoyed. I like the underlying message that I picked up on, and I hope I'm picking up on what you're trying to do, and the fact that outer beauty is reflected by your inner beauty. Whatever's going on inside will ultimately come out and be shown. I mean, it kind of plays between evil and good, and also plays between youth and aging. But the one that struck me the most was how it kind of there was an underlying message for me, at least, that if you're beautiful inside, then that's what will reflect on the outside. I liked how you started it out and you set the stage of all of it, and then you kind of let the poem progress in its own way. I was expecting there to be more of a dialogue between the good and the bad, and I liked the fact that you didn't punctuate that. You kind of let me interpret it on my own level. And I also really like what you did with the format, which I thought was really interesting, the lack of capitalization. For some reason, it gave the whole – I don't know if I'm going to put this right, but it gave the whole poem a youthful feel. It kind of gave it a softness that I wouldn't have expected that I would glean from that. I mean, you still have a period at the end of each stanza, but you don't capitalize everything. So nothing is jumping at me. It's kind of a softer lens. Pardon me?
That's in every poem. That's in every one of my poems. Sorry.
Well, for this one specifically, it was a softer touch. It gave a softer veil to the whole thing, and I thought it was very fitting to what I was picking up in that kind of wrestle between what is harsh and what isn't. So I really like the fact that it worked well on this, and I picked up on it.
Well, thank you so much.
I love what you had to say there too, Jeremy, because you kind of talked about how it has that softer feel, perhaps even a more innocent feel, but that can also really fit well with even the Evil Queen's position, because she's stuck in a time when she was softer and more youthful, and she's not able to move on. Your comment really kind of highlighted that for me. So thank you for that. That was awesome. And Pam, what did you think?
I really liked this. I said to someone earlier when I commented on this was that, you know, as always, her imagery and metaphor is a decadent dish of thought-provoking lines, hard-hitting that packs a punch. And I saw the message in this, a couple of different messages in this. The first one was that people tend to continue to judge past wrongs, that they have this that they can't let go, that there's not that willingness to give a person a chance. And now on the other side of the coin, there are people who are given plenty of chances, you know, and you just eventually have to walk away from that kind of toxicity. But what I see this about is somebody who's willing to change, and people are still, or has changed, and people are still judging. And I also saw the kind of the inner beauty thing. I really saw this as the whole idea that as we age, we kind of get this beauty, strength, and grace that comes from the inside. You know, and there's a deeper meaning to your, and a deeper acknowledgement of yourself. Like there's a confidence that you come to develop, that when with that kind of confidence, you no longer need to care about necessarily what other people think. So, you know, just as always, lines that pack a punch, and very well done.
Thank you, Pam. You don't have to depend on someone else to tell you who's the fairest or who's the prettiest on an outer scale, because I think we assume that from what we do in life and how we present ourselves. And as we age, we're going to get, you know, we're not going to be so impeccable as far as our looks and stuff. And yeah, you know, people that are younger, they are more innocent and prettier. But you know what? Beauty is beauty wilts. Stunning views if you just look at yourself the right way, I guess is what I'm trying to say.
I think that's amazing. Both Pam's comment and even your input, Fallon, because, you know, what Pam said, how people often judge us on our wrongs, it made me think of how my sister, and mind you, I'm in my 30s. I'm in my mid-30s. And
lucky you.
My sister, I know, I'm still young. But my sister just this year, just last month, has finally realized that something I said to her when I was 16 does not reflect the person I am now. And so I think that really poignantly stuck with me. But also what you say, Fallon, the idea of finding our own value within us, finding our beauty, the outside beauty is going to wilt. But if we keep handing over the value of ourselves to others, then we will never be valuable, because people will never value us the way that we should. You know, some people might value us more, some people might value us less, but ultimately we need to find that value inside and not just
based on
something.
Absolutely. If you can't sell yourself to yourself, nobody else is going to buy you.
100%. So thank you for this piece, Phil. And that was, it's just stunning. Truly. I'm so glad we started the night off with yours. And with that, Pam, would you mind taking us to the next one?
All right, up next we have Hello Beastie by Mamya, and we do have a recording for that one, so let me find it, and here we go.
Hello Beastie, hello Beastie, I watched the child as she toddled close to me, hair shining gold, cheeks red as apples. What are you doing here? The child giggled as she played with my cloak's hem, totally unfazed by my horns or my piercing gaze. You should get back where you came from. I let the child sleep and brought her back to the cottage, where three women lived and took care of the child. You're my fairy godmother, she said, beaming up at me while I cowered into shadows, until she drew me out with her innocent charm. I revoked my curse, and I tried so hard to reverse the mistake I did. out of anger and misery on her naming day. On the eve of her 16th birthday, I rode hard to the castle to prevent a tragedy. But time was not on my side. I felt a curse close in the twilight. True love's kiss. I even brought a prince to see if he could wake her. But to no avail. True love is not real. I will not ask for forgiveness, because what I have done to you is unforgivable. I kissed her forehead, hopeless and despondent, but two words brought me back. Fairy godmother, hello beastie.
I'd like to say we so appreciate it when folks are able to provide sound clouds. If they're not able to call in or call up, they're not comfortable.
It would probably help if I fix my mic. If you, as I was saying, fantastic, right? We love it when poets are able to provide sound clouds because we love hearing your work in your own voice. So if you can't call in, or perhaps you're not comfortable calling in, a SoundCloud is always the second best thing. So thank you, Manuel, for that stunning read and the stunning write. And Pam, would you mind starting us off with your thoughts?
Yeah, absolutely. I like that she went with Maleficent and Sleeping Beauty. And I like that her write seems to reflect the movie that came out a few years ago. Don't ask me how many. I know it's been a while. That showed a different side of Maleficent. And I like that I thought it was very relatable to anyone who seeks forgiveness. The most important thing, the thing that stood out the most to me in this write, is how the whole write, but particularly the ending, reminds us that romance, just getting a romantic relationship, doesn't have to be everyone's happy ending. I think that's, and not that there's anything wrong with romance or romantic relationship, but, it just doesn't have to be everyone's happy ending. Your happy ending can be discovering new friendships. Your happy ending can even be discovering the beauty of yourself. I just think it's a wonderful, thoughtful write and very well done.
Oh, beautifully said, Pam. And yes, I do agree. This one really does reflect more the Maleficent video that came out, even Maleficent 2. But you're right. Not true love is not just a romantic relationship. And it actually makes me think even of Frozen, where true love was an act of a sisterly act and not necessarily a true love kiss. So really beautifully said. Thank you for that. And Jeremy, what did you think?
I really did what Pam just said about forgiveness, because I didn't pick up on that. And I think that's a really cool underlying theme to this, because that's when she said it, that's what I was looking for. I felt that at the end, and that's what it is, because the first person narrative voice is the ugly creature, the beast, and it feels like they're looking for that. They're looking for some kind of validation. And I also like what you just said, Victoria, about the fact that love doesn't have to be – true love can be on many different levels, because this is an interesting relationship on how it's portrayed. It says godmother. It's more of a familial true love. And I like the fact that it's beastie too. I don't know if that's I'm not familiar with Maleficent, and if beastie is part of the character, if that's the actual name. But it's more endearing than just beast. So there is this weird kind of relationship, and again, that underlying forgiveness. I can't let go of what Pam said on that, because that really is what struck home. In terms of format and the dialogue, I really dug that. I think that it was kind of a growing progression in the relationship, and that made it more lasting and almost more real. If we're talking about something that's all tonight, we're going to be talking about fantasy and all of that, and I think this makes it more more real and relatable in the fact that it's more of a tangible, growing, lasting relationship. And also that struggle that between familial bonds that are all on, that are constantly tested, I guess is what I'm trying to get at. But very cool poem, and a format that works in a way that I was surprised how much I enjoyed it because of its unconventionality and how successful it was in getting that message across.
Oh, absolutely. There is definitely some unconventional approaches in this poem, but I agree. It really does add to it. Just as a fun fact, so in Maleficent, and Maleficent 2, Aurora is called Beastie by Maleficent. Unlike the Disney version of the story, Maleficent isn't the evil witch or the evil fairy. She's just a creature who made a mistake. And so she ends up getting to know Aurora and ends up calling her Beastie. I think it's because it's the idea of like beast off the old block kind of thing. So she feels like she's a part of her. And so in the end, that's where that comes from. But I love that comment, Jeremy. Thank you so much for that. I love how you always go not just into the interpretation of the poem, but even the effectiveness of the poetry structure. So thank you for that. And Fallon, what did you think of this?
Well, what I gathered from it was that life is not always a fairy tale. Things are not always going to be so perfect on the surface that, you know, where she talks about, I watched the child as she toddled close to me, her hair, sunshine, gold, cheeks, red as apples, the sweet, the innocent, the purity of it. And yet there she was playing with the cloaked helm or the, you know, seeing the things, and that it, and the child could not see the devil or the evilness of what life was going to bring to her, and that things change. I even brought you a prince to make you happy. You didn't like that shit either. You still slept. You slept within yourself. You just slept life away, not seeing things for where they are. But at the end, she forgave herself, kissing her own self, because the fairy godmother is what you only bring to what you bring to life. It don't have to be a fairy tale, but you can make things happy if you just choose to. That's what I gathered from it.
Oh, Fallon, I love that interpretation too, especially when we look at this as two sides of the same coin. One person, they're different personas. And it reminds me actually in, what is it called? Your animus or the anima or the animus. So it's a psychological idea that each woman has an animus, which is their male side. And so when you dream of love, you're actually dreaming of your animus, not of like what you actually, like you're not dreaming of a person, you're not dreaming of a soulmate, you're dreaming of your male ego within yourself. And then when they have the same thing, it's an anima. And it could shift. There's fluidity obviously in that gender, but it's that more feminine versus masculine side of self. And so I love that interpretation even of the poem in your words, Fallon, because so often we seek for these things outside of ourselves, and often we need to find that fulfillment, the validation, the love for ourselves within ourselves, because external sources will never be enough. So I love that idea of forgiving oneself and therefore being able to be woken up. That was a stunning interpretation. I think what I really appreciate about this is that as much as there is this interspersed dialogue within the poem, there's still these beautiful memories and ideas and images that are painted after them. So we get to see the story, even though it's a story many of us have heard before. Because, I mean, really, we didn't grow up with Disney to some extent, or have Disney in our life to some extent. So we know the story. We know how this plays out. But at the same time, there is that beauty in it of the way that people grow and change, that we don't have to be stuck, that we don't have to fade away, that we don't have to necessarily look further than what we already have. Sometimes what we have is already sufficient, and we just need to learn to appreciate it. Or sometimes, kind of like what Fallon was even talking about, we need to see the value in the role that we play, both for ourselves and for others, because we may have sufficient slot. We may be enough for so much more than what we think we are. And I feel like this poem really highlights that. So it's just a stunning write. It does look like Felon dropped. I'm hoping she's going to call back. She is coming back from a terrible sickness. So she may or may not call back in. But if you don't, Felon, thank you so much for joining us for the time being. We always do so appreciate you being here. And Pam, where would you like to take us to now?
All right. Well, good night, Felon, and thank you for calling in. Of course, as always, take care of yourself. And up next, we have I by Daniel Deschino. And Jeremy, will you give that a read for us, please?
You bet. It goes a little something like this. I by Daniel Deschino. I, of hatred and war, of conflict and pain, of pride and prejudice, and peace sought in vain, a lifetime of battles from a world lost in sin, seem a gentle, cool breeze to the battles within. Part villain, part hero, part sinner, part saint, to not claw my own skin can take godlike restraint. Desire and craving, a circular path with guilt and regret, it's a hemisphere wrath. I satisfy hunger, I satisfy lust. On whatever I see, my needs do I thrust. Reflection, my enemy, be an unending foe and follows me torturous wherever I go. When I look in the mirror, I know what I see, but your facial reflections is what matters to me. I can deal with my demons I have every day, but reveal them to you, well, that's here to stay. And Paul.
Oh, what a beautiful read, Jeremy. Thank you so much. I love first the play of not only the contest name, but also the show's name, especially in that second stanza, because I feel like this is part of what makes this contest so perfect for this show. We're not all good. We're not all bad. We get to make these choices. And I feel like this poem really kind of recognizes that. It, as I speak, from experience. When I was going through the divorce with my ex-husband, I went into therapy because I have traumatic history, which who doesn't? And my ex-husband was emotionally and mentally abusive. And his favorite thing to tell me was I was a 3 on a good day. So I was pretty low in life because he was supposedly the best I'd ever have. And that wasn't great. And I remember that I had to take a my therapist had me take a personality test. It's called a colors test. And so there was like red, blue, white, and yellow. And red and blue were considered contrary personalities because a person who is predominantly blue is going to be heavily focused on relationships. That's what drives them. And someone who's more of a red personality type is going to be more focused on power. And as you can imagine, someone focused on relationships could be at conflict with someone who focuses on power because, you know, relationships are about give and take and power is about how you gain. And it was quite funny to me because I actually am almost 50-50 red and blue. I was like 2% white and yellow. So I'm not really driven by peacemaking and I'm not really driven by fun, but I am driven deeply by relationships and deeply by power, depending on the day. And it works well in my personality because I'm extremely sociable, but I'm an accountant. And so my red side, if you will, gets fulfilled in my career and my blue side gets fulfilled in my not professional life. I'm able to thrive in those relationships because my career allows me to give to these other people. To maintain the position I need at work. This poem reminds me of that. It reminds me of the way in which all of us have these paradoxes within us, these things that should not work, and yet they do. And I think that if we all sat and thought about how we respond to things, how our personalities work, how we value things, we have these paradoxes, and we have these struggles. Sometimes when we recognize maybe perhaps something dark within ourselves, we want to claw it out because that's not how we value ourselves. And yet that paradox too in and of itself is a beautiful thing because you cannot know light without darkness. And so I love this piece because of the conflict. I love this piece because of the recognition in it that there's more complexity to people than merely good and evil. We are this paradoxical hodgepodge of humanity that is learning to work and thrive within ourselves, socially, professionally, what have you, and learning to balance those things, good, bad, indifferent, villain, hero, NPC in the corner. We have these things in us, and yet it's this day to day that we get to see how they swing and play, and some days are great and some days aren't. So I just think this was such a stunning piece, and it stood so prominently out to me about that paradoxical, conflicting nature of humanity. So fantastic, fantastic, right, Dale Buscino. And thank you so much, Jeremy, for that amazing read. And Pam, what did you think of this?
Well, first of all, I thought you had a wonderful comment there, Victoria. I like that you not only brought up the inner conflict that is part of the poem, but also touched upon your own personal experience and knowledge that you've gained about, you know, how we all have different variations of dualities within us. So that was really cool. And, well, first of all, I thought this had a really nice line to it. I thought it had a classic feel. And I too liked that it talked about inner conflict. I did like the nod to the show. I also liked the nod to the Jane Austen novel, Pride and Prejudice. I thought that was really cool. The lines, I satisfy hunger, I satisfy lust, and whatever I see my needs do I thrust. I thought those were some really powerful lines in the idea that in that moment it is all about fulfilling a selfish need. I also liked how in the end it says, I can deal with my demons I have every day, but reveal them to your will. That's here to stay. I like, you know, to me there's almost this sense of offering up the thought of revealing your demons to somebody, but in a very cautionary way. You know, like, yeah, I could reveal my demons to you, you know, but are you really actually ready for what they are and the harm they will cause? You know, this has been, I think, the second or third poem this week that I've seen of Daniel's that has taken on a darker note. And I like when I see something from a poet that I don't usually see from them, because to me it means somebody stepping outside of their box, and, or, you know, at least that, you know, I mean, he could have been writing dark all this time, and these are just the first time I've noticed it. But, you know, it just has really stood out to me how beautifully he expresses the dark side of human nature. So excellent write and very well done.
Oh, that was such a stunning comment, Pam. And you're right. He really does beautifully express this darkness. It's something that reminds us so much of how we have these sides that we've associated this negativity towards, something that must be hidden. Or even like words, you know, anger is considered a bad emotion. You know, hate is bad. But there's validity and beauty and good that can be found in that too. And so I agree with you. I love that there's this darker nature that's kind of spilled out before us, but it's not necessarily bad. And so I think that's just a stunning comment, because I think it's needed sometimes as a reminder. And Jeremy, what did you think of this, having read it?
Yeah, I think you guys are knocking out of the park tonight with your comments. Holy cow. I'm taken aback by what you both said. I mean, I'm sitting here taking notes on things I want to say, but I'll try to keep it brief. I really like specifically, particularly what you shared, Victoria. I think that was very revealing, very bold for you to share this in this, shared that information in this format, and I commend you on it. And I love this fact that this poem touched you to that level. And to kind of expand upon that, one part that Pam keyed in on that I agree with is the ending. I can deal with my demons every day, but I reveal them to you, and that's where I stay. And when you were talking, Victoria, I mean, that kind of revealed or reminded me of something that happened to me just this past week. In the professional world in which I'm in a corporate environment and I do something or I say something that I intend a totally different meaning and it hurts someone. And it hurts someone and they interpret something that I said in a totally different context of what I have. And it reminded me that people are dealing with their own issues and their own demons and their the way we communicate and the way that people interact in the world, you know, we're all doing it alone in a sense, right? We're all going to have the same reflections and the same interpretations of how things come across. And people are dealing with their own weight. We all have our own baggage. And the fact that people have to deal with that, you have to be respectful of it, and you have to realize that things are going to be interpreted and come across in a different way. And so I really dug how the end of this poem kind of reminded me of that, that I'm going to reveal myself and my demons in my own way, and that's going to be here to stay because I am me, and that's who I'm going to be, and that's how I'm going to deal with it. And so things that come, things out in the world, I'm going to react totally different than everyone else in the world is going to. And so I love that you guys both picked up on that in your own specific way, and I'm kind of taken aback by your comments, and it was kind of taking me even away from the poem, which I thought was brilliant in its own regard. So I'm glad that it sparked this kind of conversation. Very cool.
Oh, absolutely. And thank you for your vulnerability, because I think that's a really important insight, too, that we are all approaching things with our own demons. In fact, my husband and I we do marriage counseling just because we want to get ahead of any problem that could arise in our marriage. So we were in marriage counseling today. And my husband and I struggle with my husband's ex-military. He's a military brat as well. And your comment reminded me of therapy, because I struggle with offering feedback to him because he doesn't listen until I'm angry. And then he shuts down because I'm angry. And in therapy today, he was speaking about how it's hard for him to listen to anger because when he was growing up, anger was the only way that he was punished. And in the military, correction is done with anger. And so I'm in this weird place of how do I communicate and correct my husband and offer feedback to my husband when he is so, when he's not able to hear me until I'm angry, but then it's hitting on those demons that he has. And so your comment really reminded me of that, because even in our most intimate relationships, those are the areas too where we still have to be cognizant of those demons. And we still have to make those adjustments. And even if you do everything right, a demon is always going to rear its head. Not that it's not for us to try, but I love that comment because it is that reminder of how deeply they impact us, even in those intimate relationships where we may be revealing our demons more. Thank you for that stunning, stunning comment, Jeremy. And Pam, where would you like to take us now?
I can totally relate to that not listening to people make you angry thing, because, you know, having teenagers and just in general, I've had times where people have not listened to me until I've gone into psycho bitch mode. And then, of course, at that point.
It ain't so bad.
Right.
By the time you're there, they're just like, you're just a jerk to me all the time. It's like, never mind that I asked you with Pretty Please with a Cherry on Top 25 times before this, but it's fine. They don't count because I raised my voice. Like,
exactly,
oh.
Right?
Yes.
But
it's that confirmation bias. So anyway, sorry, go ahead.
There you go. And up next we have I'm My Own Worst Enemy by Martha Gettle. And we have a recording for this one, so here we go.
I'm My Own Worst Enemy by Martha Gettle. At last I have come to see that I'm my own worst enemy. I'm always sabotaging myself. I really can't blame anyone else. I often think someone else is in me. They stop me from being the best I can be. Keeping my head on the right path for me can be a difficult task. My own worst enemy I am. Sometimes I don't even give a damn. But I'll keep trying, you see. 'cause I'm my own worst enemy. Other times it drives me crazy, and I wonder if I'm just plain lazy. I guess I'm just destined to be my own worst enemy.
What a stunning write and fantastic scene, Martha Gettle. Thank you so much for that. And Jeremy, would you start us off with your thoughts on this?
Yeah, so cool that we got a SoundCloud on this one, because reading through it before she started presenting, I wouldn't have taken that tone. And the fact that she made it a song, it kind of put a much lighter tone on the whole thing. It's like an aw shucks kind of thing, kicking the can down the road. You know, I keep tripping over my own shoelaces kind of feel, country feel. And if I just would have read this, or if any of us would have read it in our own mind, I have it a much darker tone. So I love the fact that this was a SoundCloud submission, because it brought a whole new lighthearted feel to this. And I realized that it's much, it almost makes it more relatable, right? Because we are our own worst enemy in a lot of ways. And so if I would have seen these words, I would have taken it and not have related to it myself and made it more as introspective as I did by making it lighthearted in a sing-songy kind of way. So, Martha, thank you for this submittal. I think it was wonderful, and it brought a whole new perspective for me.
Oh, I would agree. I think that she definitely did make it much more lighthearted than was anticipated just by getting to hear it from her. So thank you for that. And it just really does emphasize the ways in which we read work versus how the author intends it, or in this case, the musician intends it. So thank you for that, Jeremy. And Pam, what did you think of it?
Martha has such a sweetie voice. You know, she reminds me of this lady I used to work with way back when I did telemarketing. And she never raised her voice. She never got angry. She talked to people no matter how much people chewed her out or were rude to her. She kept going with the sweetest little voice, and she was like one of the best sellers on the floor. And Martha has that kind of voice where it's so endearing and so sweet. And so it really does kind of offer a more of a lighthearted tone to the right. But I'm gonna look back at it as if it had been read by somebody who's like angry like me or something. I don't know. But to me, I really felt there were some really poignant lines in this. Besides the fact of repentance of being I am my own worst enemy, and that's so true for many of us. I like that it touched on where it's. Says, sometimes I don't give a damn, but I'll keep trying, you see, because I'm my own worst enemy. Other times it drives me crazy. I wonder if I'm just plain lazy. I really feel like within those lines, and speaking as someone who just recently got her medications adjusted to help with my depression, I feel like that very much is reflecting on the thought of depression or chronic pain or any condition, unseeable condition, where you find yourself laying on the couch. You find yourself not wanting to start your day and wondering if it's just your imagination, wondering if you're just lazy, and... as always, I think this has some wonderful lines in it. I do like that she's been singing her SoundClouds and then providing them for us, and I really appreciate Martha and her poetry, and this is very well done.
Beautifully said, Pam. And I love even the comment that brings in your coworker from back when you were working who just continued to have that upbeat spirit. There's a beauty in that, but at the same time, as someone who is tend to be perceived as fairly bubbly, even on my worst days, being perceived as fairly bubbly, it can also feel like so very isolating, because it feels almost like
all right. Well, Victoria just went really quiet, didn't she? I'm going to guess she dropped. No, she's back. Okay, what? Okay. We can't hear you, Victoria. All right, well, we figure out why. Oh, there she is. Victoria, we heard you for a moment. Are you there, Jeremy?
Of course I am. I mean, if I can request an interlude while we're waiting, I mean, this would be a perfect time, just saying.
Yeah, I don't think that's going to happen. But what I will say is, we don't have a whole lot of rights. So speaking of music, now, I don't know if you're a Disney fan or not, but I figure everybody knows Disney movies because they've been around for decades. Now, I personally have always felt like the villains get some of the best songs.
Ooh.
You know, like, yes, right? Well, and I also find villains to be more intriguing characters. So.
Yes. Can you hear me now, guys?
Yes, now we can.
Oh, thank God. I was sitting here and I was like, I didn't do anything. I moved, but
there was one brief moment where we heard you say something like, hey, and that was it.
I literally put myself on mute. Well, I was like, did I leave myself on mute? So I checked my phone. Nope, not on mute. Like, okay, so put myself on mute, take myself off. Can you hear me now? Nope. Okay, well, this is, oh, my life. Is it okay if I make my comment really quickly on Martha's?
Or
would
go
you like
for
to,
it.
We have
plenty of time.
Oh, good. So what I wanted to say is that I loved how you even spoke about your coworker who always had that kind of like happy disposition. And I think you and I actually spoke about this earlier, is that FaZe has another contest up on imposter syndrome. And considering that I've been doing my profession, when people think of an accountant, because I'm a public accountant who specializes in taxation of small businesses and high wealth individuals. So when someone thinks of an accountant, they think of someone who's composed, who's well thought out, who's all this stuff. They don't think of someone who's high energy and bubbly. It's just not the image of the traditional accountant. And if I talk taxation, if I talk accounting, I do go into that serious space. But as soon as I'm out of it, my default goes back to this kind of high energy, bubbly person who's personable and wants to connect with people. It's not just tax law and taxation and all that good stuff. And so I feel kind of what you were saying, because there's that concern of how I'm being perceived, and even for the imposter syndrome, you know, do I fit in this place because of that? Because now all of a sudden it feels like you're not where you're supposed to be. It causes me to, and it has caused me to question my knowledge. It's caused me to question myself. Do I deserve the title of tax expert, which I have, and am recognized as a tax expert by the IRS. And so I love even what you were saying about your coworker, because I feel that. And in relation to this piece, you start to realize that while it's easy to blame everybody else for your misfortunes, or it's easy to say, well, I'm just going to do this because eventually this person will do X, Y, and Z anyways, we're really self-sabotaging. You can think of a bubbly person or a happy disposition as a mask, and that keeps people from getting close to you because they don't have to see your hurts, because wounds are vulnerable. Or, you know, you can sabotage relationships because of those past demons that Jeremy was even speaking about. And the way in which we allow these things to influence us really is that villain in the back of our mind. It's not these outside sources. It's not the world necessarily against us. It's the way in which we undermine our own well-being, health, and success just by questioning and allowing those demons to kind of whisper in our ear. And so I love this song, even in its lightheartedness, because it does speak about the ways in which we harm ourselves, we blame ourselves, and we sabotage ourselves out of the best moments in life. So fantastic write, and I loved listening to her sing it because, like Jeremy said, it really did bring a little bit of lightness to this, but at the same time, there's still that seriousness that makes us sit and engage with it. So, but you were saying, Pam, I interrupted what sounded like a fantastic conversation about how villains are far more interesting than heroes, which I agree with.
Oh, yes, absolutely. Then they get better music, you know, like Scar singing his song in The Lion King, right? I don't know. I just, you know, I feel like movies are trying to fix that more. Like you see like a little bit more movies with the anti-hero. But for years it seemed like, you know, the good guys were very one-dimensional. But that's just my personal opinion and thoughts.
Oh, no, I agree. I mean, I would... And I think of Frozen because God knows I watch it like two times a day because I have a 2- and a 4-year-old. And the bad guy in it is the prince, Prince Hans. And, you know, he gets like one song and it's with Anna. And there's really not much to him other than that. He's just kind of this, other than pretending to be good. And then he's, ooh, bad, which is like, you know, introducing children to how the world is lies to us and evil lies to us. For the most part, he didn't get a lot of attention, but I do think of like Gaston in Beauty and the Beast because it's my favorite movie ever.
Yeah.
Now you all know how to break into my passwords. But just kidding. but what I think of like the 90s Beauty and the Beast and even the ones before it, like The Little Mermaid, there is so much more dimension and the bad guy plays so much more of a part. And I agree, they are starting to move around and away from that. But once upon a time, they did have these great songs and great storylines and the heroes just kind of like on the journey, doing their thing on the journey. So yeah, I agree with that.
Absolutely. Well said there. And, all right, well, up next we have The Story of a Villain by Saul Ortinez. And this is actually not from the same contest, but is Faziana put it on the board because it does fit with the topic of the night. And Victoria, will you give that a read for us, please?
Of course. The Story of a Villain by Saul Ortinez. He who only sees beauty is blind. The polarity of everything is wild. Darkness is needed to see the light. Need the bee low to enjoy great height. The thrill is the lesson of experience. Two faces in event of succeeding sequence. Looking imperatively in both directions, the reason behind every villain's decision. We can't judge the aesthetic quality of a story without learning every character's misery. Every role is a book of interesting plot, carrying load of intersecting scene in a spot. We cannot be a protagonist in pretense. Reality is imagination if fate is so dense. Being glad will lead to mocking frown. Emotions overflow, grinning like a clown. The truth about the world is a beast. Only lucky people are the ones so blessed. Complications are same to humanity. Rocky life is a spice to dignify personality. End poem. Oh, this is great. Thank you so much, Laura Tees, for this. And Pam, would you start us off with your thoughts on this piece?
Yeah, I don't think I've seen too much of Saul Ortinez's writing, and I really like this. And a great opening. He who only sees beauty is blind. The polarity of everything is wild. Darkness is need to see the light. I like how there's that kind of sense that we need that balance, and we need to be able to see that inner beauty. I also like the idea that the truth about the world is a beast, only lucky people are the ones so blessed. Complications are saying to humanity, rocky life is spice to dignified personality. That was there's a lot of wonderful lines throughout this poem, but the whole idea that the challenges we face in life add to our dignified personality. And I thought that was a great choice of words, dignified personality, and the whole idea of how we stand up against trying times and how we walk through them shapes the person that we are and shapes the way that we see the world. You know, I think Ephesiana definitely made a great choice in putting this one on the topic board because it does fit really well with that whole idea that we all struggle with that beast and that hero inside of us. And so excellent write and very well done.
That was such a stunning comment, Pam, because you're right. Our experiences do shape us. They do shape our worldview. And that's something we could dive into, even with this show, because a hero probably doesn't think that they're being evil. Their worldview has told them that this is life. And yes, I'm sure there were people who just were evil for the sake of evil, serial killers. But at the same time, what determines evil? What determines good? Is it greed? Because there are definitely people who are good who are still greedy. And so I love that, the idea of how we respond to these life events and how we allow them and these experiences to shape our worldview. I think that's so poignant and so human, such a human experience to acknowledge. Thank you for that. And Jeremy, what do you think?
I'm meaning in this in the best way possible, soul. So please understand what I'm trying to get across. The fact, I'm going to call it statement poetry, and I don't know how many times you guys come across this, where every line on this poem is almost like a prompt to me. I get so caught up in the statement of each line that my mind kind of races off. And so like I try to look at this as a cohesive piece, but I'm so intrigued by what soul is saying in each one of these lines that my mind just kind of spins off and I get excited with it. And it's not to detract from what the author is trying to create in the overall piece of the poetry. But I don't know if you guys ever come across that. I mean, I know that we all read a lot of stuff on this site and our other sites or poetry in our lives, but sometimes there's poems that they're making such cool, bold statements in each line that I have a hard time focusing on what they're trying to accomplish, and it's not a detraction. I dig it because my brain goes off and I kind of spin off, and I caught myself doing this every time. As you guys were talking and we read through this, I'm trying to give you a reaction, but I'm so taken aback in each statement of each line that I can't help but daydream with it. And I hope Soul takes this as a compliment because that's how I'm meaning it, because I think it's really cool on the thought process on what's being created here. And I don't know. I hope I'm not babbling, guys, and I hope you can understand the experience of what I'm trying to convey with this poem.
No, I absolutely do. And I love what you said too. It really does read like that statement poem. Each line, each thought is a statement. And yet each statement creates this overarching picture, which really is a human expression. We all have a list of statements. There's a list of statements in how life goes, and they're vague enough that you can kind of play with it. So even the first line, he who only sees beauty is blind. Well, that immediately makes me think of beauty is in the eye of the beholder. And if beauty is in the eye of the beholder, maybe just maybe that line could mean not only do they stop once they see beauty, but they miss the deeper parts because they're looking at surface deep. Or even where they said, where is it? You cannot judge the aesthetic quality of a story really reads like you can't judge a book by its cover. A book can be very beautifully bound. It can also be bound in human skin. You're not really going to know until you dive into what the story's going to tell. So I think that was actually a fantastic comments, an amazing compliment, because this is a poem where you can really dive into each line and really analyze it to understand how it shows all the different facets and dimensions of a human. So, no, I didn't think you were babbling at all. I thought that was stunning. Thank you for that, Jeremy. What I really loved about this is that there's this story that's unwinding within it. And kind of like what Jeremy said and how I expanded on my interpretation of his comment, there's really is that dimension of life and the way that it evolves, kind of like what Pam was saying, life and the way in which these experiences affect us and how we choose to grow with them or not. We may allow them to stunt us. But it is a reminder in many ways that we can't judge people, going back to that aesthetic kind of thought. We can't judge people just based on what they look. We can't judge people based on how they speak or how they write or what their profession even is, because life did not have the same walk for them as you. And I love the play even of the heroes and the villains in this. The play even on the Beast reminded me of Beauty and the Beast, because when you think of the character of Beast, who's kind of the anti-hero of the whole thing, because Gaston's a bad guy, Belle's a good guy, and Beast is kind of this evolving fluid character of redemption. If people have seen him in his Beast form, like Belle, the initial reaction is fear and terror. But it was only when you dive in and truly understand people that you can finally understand the story of their life and the reason that they react to those things. And it is a study that takes a lifetime or more to truly be able to go and understand. And so, especially in that last verse, the truth about the world is a beast. Only lucky people are the ones who are blessed. It reminds me even, again, of Beauty and the Beast in that sense, because the face of the beast was because he was cursed. Because of that, people could not see beyond to his heart. And so I love this piece, the way in which it reminds us that people grow and people change and we evolve. And yet we are still going to have those things that impact us from our past, that stunt us from our past, and even let us grow and change because of it. So it's just a really stunning piece. So thank you guys for your fantastic comments on this. And thank you, Solar Tinez, for allowing us to read this piece. And Pam, where would you like to take us now?
All right. Up next, we have Character by Stephen T. Wellman. And Jeremy, will you give that a read for us, please?
You bet. It goes like this. Character by Stephen T. Wellman. Lines on my face, significant reminders there are cracks in my soul. My wounds bleed beacons of light. I am a luminescent luminary, a long-standing lighthouse scattered my darkness. Waves of salty tears preserved. I have loved. I have lost. I have betrayed. I have been betrayed. The image in the glass, a testimony of deceit and lies, funny thinking thoughts. I am a perfectionist. Knowing full well my scarred psyche bleeds brilliant hues of painful light. Perhaps a false security, covering wounds with a sugar-coated salve. This precision and accuracy, only an act or illusion, playing the particular pretender, or better yet, the practical joker, struggling to make my way through this journey, playing a game of chess only to be rooked, moving forward and backward from side to side, going nowhere fast, but holding on. I remain hopeful. It is never lost. It is a light overcoming darkness. It has no shadows. So I continue to live. I continue to love without reason, allowing lifelines to write my face, charismatic character revealed. End poem.
Beautiful read. Thank you so much for this. I love this piece because it reminds me not just of how we as humans evolve, but even the idea of how a character is developed. The simple and the character in my mind is someone who's becoming a silver fox, if you will. But so often we can look at all the things that have happened to us and we can say, I want tit for tat. And so I love even the idea where he says, I have loved, I have lost, I have betrayed, I've been betrayed. Because we don't like to speak about our failings. We don't like to speak about things that we wish we had done better. We like to avoid the things that show how we are human, that is not in a positive light. And yet he recognizes, and I think part of becoming a better human is recognizing those wounds and attempting to find ways to sterilize them so that they might heal, or perhaps play this act of illusion that pretend until, you know, until it's second nature kind of idea. Or even playing that practical joker, which resonates deeply with me because in my own personal therapy, we're dealing with shame. And one of my ways that I deal with things that I think with dealing with things that I find shameful, things that I struggle with, I'll often try and turn them into a joke, which is also why if someone says something to me in a joking manner when we're speaking seriously, it's a reminder to me that every joke has at least a truth to it. And so even when he says, play the practical pretender or better yet, the practical joker, that even speaks of the shame that we struggle with and the ways that we try and hide it. And yet we always come back to this idea that we're stuck, that a rook is coming for us, that our moves are limited. And it's not the queen, so she may not be able to move in all the ways, or the rook may not be able to move in all the ways that she can, but we still feel the way in which we are caught. And I think it was best said to me that in many ways, when we have these wounds in our soul and our mind, that we're like a abused cat. You don't want to scratch. You don't want to run away. But sometimes that's all you have. Sometimes you feel so cornered that that's when you start to reach out and strike. In this, he touches on that, but so very briefly tries to remind himself that hope is still there, that the rook can't move in all those ways. Even when he feels cornered, he can move in ways the rook cannot. And so there is still hope, there is still light, there is still shadows. And so even though all these worries and time and laugh lines and happiness and sadness is written on his face, it adds to the charisma of the character, the silver fox who's lived and learned and hopefully became more. And Pam, what did you think of this?
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, well, first of all, that was a wonderful comment. I have to say, well, on a technical level, I really like some of the alliteration that he's put in here. Like, I am a luminescent luminary, a longstanding lighthouse, scattering my darkness, waves of salty tears preserve. You know, they're just wonderful use of the L and the S sound within those lines. And I do like how this seems to be about personal growth and about that kind of that nature of how we're affected and how there's both the light and the dark in us. And I think there's some really wonderful use of metaphor in here, like being the lighthouse. I find it really intriguing, though, that he's a lighthouse, you know, and yet at the same time, it's kind of like the idea of feeling like you're the leader, like maybe in a family, and the guide, but not always feeling like you're able to keep it together to play that role. And I also liked playing the practical pretender, or better yet, practical joker, that whole idea of covering up pain with jokes. This is wonderful all the way through, but another line I liked was, knowing full well my scarred psyche bleeds brilliant hues of painful light. I think that to me that touches on the idea that so many creative people create out of their pain and out of their darkness. I do like the ending to where he says, I continue to love without reason, allowing lifelines to write my face, charismatic character revealed. I like that there's such an appreciation for the charismatic character that he is. And also, I like the idea, you know, of someone who is hurt, has been through painful experiences in life, and will continue to love. So just a wonderful write and very well done.
Oh, that was such a stunning comment, Pam. Thank you so much for that. And Jeremy, what did you think of this?
Bravo, Pam, for pointing out the literary alliteration here. I don't think we do that enough, but I always like to give poets credit when they use poetic device, and I miss it often, so thank you for pointing that out. I am guilty 100% for any time I'm uncomfortable or there's something awkward. I laugh, and I bring humor to an awkward degree of situations. Anytime where things are – when I'm uncomfortable or when I'm being attacked, that's when I choose to be awkward and bring in humor. So I definitely cued into that. One thing that I also want to key in, and I really enjoyed in Victoria, in your comment, you mentioned several times, it's only mentioned once, Rook. And in your analysis of this poem, that really struck a chord with you. So I thought that was really cool that symbolism on what Stephen put together struck such a chord with you. I mean, I think it's really powerful when someone uses symbolism, and it obviously strikes ahead. And I like how you analyzed that metaphor of being a rook and choosing which way to do. But the fact that you kept revisiting it is really a testament to him and what he created there. So that was very neat. I also like the fact when poets take a theme and then circle back, I always appreciate it. Even if it's as simple as what was done here with the lines in the face and how they brought it at the very end of the poem, it gives me a sense of closure to a poem, and it makes it the whole entire piece more comfortable. So I like it when anytime any poet takes a theme and either uses an extended metaphor or in this case where they blatantly just come back to what they started off with. I don't know. It gives me a sense of the whole thing fits into a nice package. So, yeah, I really appreciated your guys' comments. This poem struck a chord with me as well, and I really like how it was composed.
Oh, that was a beautiful comment, Jeremy. Thank you. I agree. He definitely strikes chords, but the beautiful thing is that he strikes chords on different levels. And I agree. That's really where it shows the effectiveness of a poet, is when they're able to make something resonate with a different person, a different thing each time. So thank you for that fantastic comment. And Pam, where would you like to take us to now?
All right, up next we have Night, A Shining Tragedy by Jay Moss, and I'll go ahead and give this one a read, and it goes like this. Within truth and lies, the legend comes to light, ignoring all the early cries of the simple, loyal knight. Though not humble, just prudent, seeing fame with no delight, just annoyance that has proven to only hide the pain from light. As no field is without its woes, and the death burdens even of foes, holding no gallantries with blows, precise and cold as the river flows, while blocking all thoughts that could easily stump and diminish the courage that daily holds him up, even at court where his facade holds him on top, always hiding each fissure, wondering if they'll ever clump. And break his demeanor, which he so desires, but knowing if allowed, none could light the blaze of those who expect his guidance to never tire. So he blocks all thought, hiding them with a fighter's gaze, marching each time, knowing the burden hidden never gets lighter, as the legend only deepens, as the count becomes higher, each victory a heroic feat, and countless under his feet, adding stains and screams to dreams that never become fleet, thus becoming to many a hero, while to others a butcher of dreams, seeing himself as both neither hoping it all can be redeemed. The last day, all forgiven, or so he prays, since he can't give himself the peace of mind he lost the day his sword first bled and couldn't retrieve. End poem.
Fantastic read, Pam. Thank you so much. And thank you, Jay Moss, for allowing us to read this work tonight. Jeremy, would you start us off with your comments?
Pam, you mentioned it before about how much the visual, the layout of the poem, how it needs to visually work, you know, with the lines and how it all needs to line up. And I agreed with you that and that struck a chord with me on this one because it gained so much momentum. I mean, I thought we would be dealing and talking a lot more about the more Disney aspect of fantasy and the whole lore of everything that goes on with that. And this one definitely falls in stride with it because it builds. And so I brought up the format because as you're reading it, I'm kind of getting more excited about what's going on because there's more and more content with each stanza. The rhyming worked, but he carries it and he builds it, and there's gumption to it is the best way I can describe it. But along with that, it wasn't simply a hero's tale. There was something else tugging at it. This hero also was struggling with other demons, other deficiencies. And that was the duality, the double-sidedness, the hero divided that Afasiana, I think, was trying to create with this whole contest. And I think it was more subtle because you're on that horse and you're gallantly riding along with this guy, but there's something dragging him back. There's that dangling, I'm going to say it wrong. There's that dangling participle that's holding him back the whole time. There's that beast that's holding him back that's more of an inner struggle. And I thought that was kind of a really sly way of attempting this contest. Because it was a struggle that was different than what we've seen on the other ones. But I think I liked the fantasy of it, and I liked the build, and I think it was very apropos. And I liked it. I liked the spin is something we haven't seen yet tonight, so I enjoyed it.
That was such a stunning comment. And I agree, this really does highlight that duality, the way in which a hero is also going to have those struggles. But I agree, the form also really struck me. As did the rhyme scheme. I am, Pam knows how psychotic I get when I look at rhyme schemes, because if you're going to change the traditional layout of words, or if you're going to change your rhyme scheme, I always ask the question, why? And I have to admit, I don't have the answer for this poem just yet, because I feel like it's so much to it that the surface level has a really beautiful meaning, but there's more that I want to dig into to see it. And so the fact that we start off with a rhyme scheme that's A, B, A, B, and then the third stanza, we have kind of slant perfect rhyme of A, 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 A. Yeah, there was four A's there. And then we have stump up top clump. There again is that imperfect rhyme, but more like an AABA kind of thing. And so I want to dig into it because of that. And I think there's actually a form name for this type of poetry where there's rhyme, but there's no meter to it. I don't remember what that is, but I agree. It does allow the building of that momentum. It kind of drags you along and makes it feel almost more like that free verse with that in rhyme snuck within there. But I think what really stood out to me is that it's a reminder that while Disney likes to show a solid division between good and bad and leave with these happily ever afters, a lot of these stories, which you kind of mentioned, Jeremy, don't actually have a lot of happy stories. In The Little Mermaid, for example, she turns to seafoam, and that's kind of the end of it. Sleeping Beauty originally woke up because she was birthing triplets from the king that raped her, and one was nursing upon her breast. I mean, these stories come that we associate with Disney and happy things. They come with very dark pasts, And that doesn't even get into the psychology behind them. Tim and I spoke about this, how Winnie the Pooh actually could be seen as different mental disorders. And Peter Pan, there's lore of him actually being an angel of death for children in suicides. And there's even more as you go further and further into it. But this poem doesn't necessarily touch on the history of these so much as it is a reminder that to every story there's complexity. To every hero, they're going to have days that they don't want to do the right thing. They don't want to do the good thing. That no one is innately good and always good, but we're more fluid, and that each person has their own stumbling blocks that they have to overcome or succumb to. And in the end, sometimes it is just about peace of mind, and sometimes we succumb to the final battle and sort of lose a piece of us. I think this piece really shows the complexity, not just of good and bad, but even the way in which heroes themselves can sometimes be villains. It's just a matter of how the story is told. But not to get too long-winded, is always a fun thing to think about, especially when you think of our history. Much of our history, we have the good guys and the bad guys, but we have to remember it's only the winner who gets Pam, right? Because of what did you think of this?
Well, first of all, I think you and Jeremy both had awesome comments. I feel like the change in rhyme pattern and the change in line lengths really adds to the whole thought of how chaotic a hero's life can be, especially a hero that faces battle. And I remember, earlier, I think it was, Jeremy, you mentioned in Mamyaw's poem how there was this really, sense of reality in it, despite being about a fantasy. And I felt like there was that in this too, and in fact, in many of the rites tonight, because I know you just mentioned this, Jeremy, and the whole idea that we haven't been talking a whole lot about, fantasy and fairy tales. And this one definitely does touch on a fairy tale type setting. But to me, it also has that kind of smack of reality and the whole idea that anybody who's presented as being a warrior, whether it's a medieval times or somebody who is sent over, to the Mideast or, World War I, World War II, anybody who has had to fight, and leave their home and then has come back and been, abused and criticized. Or I'm going to bring up one of my all-time favorite movies and this reminds me of. Because, of course, I'm sure you both remember the movie, I'm suddenly blanking out. Okay, I can't blank out now because, Good Morning Vietnam with Robin Williams. And right after the place gets blown up and he's confronting the Vietnam kid who's supposed to be his friend. And the kid yells, "I'm not the enemy, you're the enemy." And it is such a poignant scene. And the end of this poem, the last stanza of this poem reminds us, just like that scene in that movie, that for some, the warrior will be seen as a hero, and for some, the warrior will be seen as an enemy, a destroyer of dreams, a destroyer of families. So I just really think this is a really hard-hitting rite that touches on the, just the horror and the psychological burden of being a warrior. And so just an excellent rite and very well done.
Oh, really beautifully said, Pam. And I agree, just even on that last note, this does touch on that idea of what is the story we're really telling? What is the perspective that it's coming from? And your comment even reminds me of the warrior, not just in the sense of the warrior coming back from battle is a hero to their people and you know, a villain to the country that they're leaving. But it even reminds me of my own husband to some extent, because he is a 100% disabled veteran, and PTSD is one of the issues in his profile. And so when he was getting out of the military, the Wounded Warrior Project actually provided me a book as his spouse, called The Stranger in My Bed, because even those that come back, people who left, and it just speaks again to the way in which these events scar and mark and change those who go through it. So I think your comment is so poignant in that, because it shows the impact and the effect not only of what soldiers go through who are claimed to be heroes, who come back with this dark side that they're expected not to have, but even that idea of who is really the villain here. Is it the victor? Is it those that are defeated, or does it really just depend? And I would agree with that, that life is so much more complex than a simple delineation of what is good and what is bad and who is righteous just because they won. So thank you for that, Pam. That was a stunning comment. And where would you like to take us to next?
All right. Up next, we have The Beauty and the Beast by T. Perry 898. And Victoria, will you give that a read for us, please?
I know you're letting me read this because I've already mentioned that this movie is my favorite. So, yes, I will happily read it. The Beauty
awesome.
And the Beast. But The Beauty and the Beast by T. Perry 898. Once the beast would ask of beauty for the keys to heaven's gate, he who languished in such madness that no kindness could abate, one that's trapped in melancholy, the curse that's set to last, who was broken by the crucifix and was crucifixed and is haunted by the past. She is an angel of perfection, cast in pastel shades of blue, eyed herself in the reflection, thinking what a perfect view, thought it fanciful to think it, there is nothing in a name, for the beast and precious beauty, they are one and all the same. And poem. And Pam, what did you think of this?
Oh, I thought this was wonderful. As always, T. Perry has wonderful rhyme and flow. On a side note, it reminds me of a Saturday Night Live sketch with the Beauty and the Beast, where the beauty thinks that she's the beauty and Beast is the beast, and Beast is like, wait a minute. You think I'm the beast? It's like, no, you are. But anyway, and I really like how this talks about that all parts of ourselves are the same, the complete package. That and yeah, has it. I would end with the idea for the beast and precious beauty. They are one and all the same. And I felt like the stanza, the second stanza I mentioned in my comment, was my absolute favorite. And the idea that it referenced to me being trapped in melancholy, and with the mention of the crucifix, I felt like it was the idea of becoming a martyr for somebody else's happiness. Yeah, I think there was definitely some strong lines in this brevity, and it was very well done.
Oh, Pam, thank you for that giggle about the beast thinking he's the beauty and the beauty thinking that she was, because it's so true. But I really love the way you finished up that comment, because in so many ways, we become victims of our own making when we sacrifice our own happiness and our own self to others, when it's to the point when it's detrimental. And I think that there is a beauty and a beast in and of that act itself. It's the beauty of the act, and it's the beast of the cost. So thank you for that really insightful and stunning comment. And Jeremy, what did you think of this?
Yeah, totally dug it, first of all. And I was taken aback at the beginning, the first three stanzas, to be honest, thinking that it was a sweet, succinct love poem. And then there's kind of a turn there in the final one especially in the final lines when it says it's one and the same, and it becomes more of an introspective commentary about the duality of a person and their separate sides. So I like the fact that there was added complexity to it, because even though as I'm looking back over it, I'm saying that, yes, that's what it is. It's a self-introspective poem, but it could still be a love poem. So I'm kind of interpreting it in both ways, and I like the fact that it's kind of open-ended that way. And if it wasn't packaged as Beauty and the Beast, and if it wasn't in this contest tonight, I might have gone a different way with it. But I like the fact that you take the what Victoria likes so much with the Beauty and the Beast and the whole lineage with what goes on with that story, and it frames it in that way. And so your mind goes that direction as a love story. And then the fact that there is that spin at the end because of what we know of Beauty and the Beast, I mean, I think it adds a whole lot, layer of complexity, and it sets you up for that kind of mind twist, which I really enjoyed.
Oh, absolutely. And I love what you said, too, about the duality of a person being in this, that idea of that they're both one and the same, and yet this also can read as a love story. And what that reminded me of, and I'm going to kind of jump springboard into my comment with that, is that this reminds me, and your comment really solidified it in my mind, the idea of the ugly duckling. Because if we don't understand and value our own worth, if we are constantly asking for beauty because we do not see beauty within ourselves, then we're stuck and we're never going to be able to find the thing that is precious to us. We're never going to see this. And yet there's also that hope that in some day we will have that big reveal, that we will understand that our beauty may not be, you know, social standard physical beauty. It might be just the beauty of your soul, the kindness and goodness of a genuinely amazing person. It might be a selfless on meeting that idea of beauty. If the ugly duckling is so stuck on the idea of looking like other ducks, then their life is always going to be trapped in that melancholy. They're going to be stuck in that curse. And nothing they will ever do, as much as they may slave over themselves, preen their feathers, if you will, they're always going to be viewing themselves as that sort of beast. That's never enough. Never mind that they're forgetting this transformation of this ugly duckling into this swan, and that there is beauty and perfection in themselves as they are. So I really loved that comment of yours, Jeremy, because I think, at least in my mind, it really solidified this piece that seeking beauty in ourselves rather than asking for beauty from the outside world, because until we can see our own beauty, no one else will. So thank you for that comment and helping me in framing my own thoughts. And thank you, T. Perry, for this fantastic poem. Where would you like to take us now?
All right. Up next, we have Part Sinner, Part Saint by Dazzling Diamond. And Jeremy, will you give that a read for us, please?
You bet. Part Sinner, Part Saint by Dazzling Diamond. Half a hero, divided villain, revealed his wild side as a demon, a devious devil in the garb of a saint, deceiving innocent people. Nowadays engaged in nightly prayers to seek redemption from his hideous deeds, so much chaos, confusion shattering the peace. The lucid dreams broken like crystal wine glass, shards of dreamscape splatted everywhere. Suddenly his volcanoes erupted from his insanely to challenge the sanity of normal human beings, like an armed robber, has entered into the psychedelic realms, spreading horrible horrors. She always wondered why he doesn't look directly into her loving eyes, as he was guilty of cheating and deceiving, pretending his saintly disguise as a werewolf in a sheepskin. End poem.
Toria dropped. I'm sure she'll be back shortly, but in the meantime, I'm going to go ahead and comment. That was an excellent read there, Jeremy. You know, for me, I really thought this was an excellent write on the devil in disguise. And the what particularly hit hard for me was where he says, she says, a devious devil in the garb of a saint deceiving innocent people. You know, I can't help but think of, you know, so many people in positions of power or authority who have abused it, who have abused people physically, emotionally, sexually, you know, and you know, abused children. And, you know, so instantly for me that part just hits really hard. I found that the imagery, I was particularly drawn to the imagery in the third stanza, as I found it a little bit more surreal than the rest. And I think so that the lucid dreams broken was really a great opening line for that. It was really dark and haunting. And what I found clever about this, right, was at the end where she says, as a werewolf in the sheep's skin, rather than just the wolf. Because by putting it as a werewolf, it becomes something supernatural. And by putting it as something supernatural, it reminds us that there are battles against forces that we cannot see. You know, I just think this is a beautiful and intriguing write on the whole idea of the that evil disguises itself. And it's very well done. And welcome back, Victoria.
Thank you. And I was going to say, that was such a stunning comment. I got to read the rest of the poem while I was listening to your comment. And I have to say, if I might remark upon even how you mentioned, it was a great idea that they did the werewolf in sheepskin. I would agree. I think that's a really poignant thing to point out, because when you look at the lore of lycanthropy, talk about alliteration in that line, werewolves or lycanthropes don't have their body morph into these beasts. And it's not like a skinwalker who puts the skin of the animal on, but rather the bones would crack and creak and the skin would split and slosh off. And so when you think of a werewolf in sheep's skin, it's very much like seeing this person that you love and then seeing this beast emerge violently out of them. And it speaks to the defeat that comes with it, because they can transform back too. So I think that was a really poignant thing to kind of point out. So thank you for that, Pam. And Jeremy, would you mind sharing what you thought, having read it?
I would be happy to. In reading this in the beginning, and maybe it's because I
Jeremy, do you need to adjust your headphone or something?
Oh, thank God. I thought I dropped again.
How's that? Is that better?
That's better. I can hear you.
Sorry, guys. No, the first two stanzas I thought was talking about a little kid. I thought it was like a devilish little kid. I mean, maybe that's because that's what's going on in my life right now, is I have one, and it felt more innocent than that. And then I like what Pam said about it being more how you liked the third, and it was more fantastical, because it was. And then it became more mature for me in that third. And then in the fourth, it really got real and it got harsh. And I like what both of you said and what you picked up on, especially in the closing lines. But then I realized that this is part sinner, part saint. And this is really a devilish poem. And so it's making me think that the author's voice, there's like an affinity or a love for that darkness, despite all of the darkness that is shown in all of this and all the pain and all of the negativity that's shown. It still says part saint. So there's still some goodness found in it. I don't know if that's a weird interpretation of it, but I thought the title kind of captured differently than what I felt in the whole body of this, being that the body was much more dark, but there's still hope.
because it still says part saint. So I thought that was kind of a neat dichotomy to the whole rite.
I really like that comment, Jeremy, because not looking at the title of the poem, if we don't take that into it, it really does seem like we are being given this deceitful person, and there doesn't seem to be that redeeming quality therein. And so I love that you mentioned that. I was going to, as you were, you actually reminded me of my ex-husband. I think he meant well, but it was one of those relationships that didn't start off toxic, and he was not, and I hope he is not, a toxic person by himself. But because of the time he came into my life, I was at a very dark point. I'd had a boyfriend who committed suicide the year prior, and I had went on a whole binge of trying to save people, which also ended with a friend slitting their throat in front of me over MSN Messenger, because that was the thing at the time. And in many ways, in my mother's eyes, he was a hero. But because of the relationship and the nature and the course that it took, because there were those lucid dreams that were broken and those crystal glasses that left shards on the floor, there was a lot of bad that came in it. And I think, to me, if I look for redemption in this poem, because it doesn't read as a redeeming poem, it doesn't read as two sides. It reads as this negative person, this dark presence in our life, in their life, or in the story, not to assume. There's this darkness, but you're right, there has to be something redeeming, because there is still that part saint. And so I think of my ex-husband, who my mother thought saved me. And I think of the ways in which there was so many things that went on behind the scenes that I didn't involve my family in, because I wanted a life with this man. And, you know, don't hang all your dirty laundry if you don't want the family to know what color your underwear is. And so I think of it in that sense. And I know he just recently married again. And I truly hope that he has a wonderful and fulfilling marriage. But I think of it in that sense, that sometimes people can be dark and deceiving because of the nature of the relationship. It could just be the age. It could be the points in life that they enter the relationship into. It can create toxicity, even if people are not innately bad. It just happens to be how those event sometimes. But there's always hope that once they leave that situation, they can make better choices. And perhaps the purpose of even being called a werewolf means that they can change, even if the change does not always seem to be permanent. So, stunning comments, guys, and what a wonderful write from Dazzling Diamond. And Pam, where are we off to now?
All right. Up next, I'm going to read my poem, and this is Split the Bridge, and it goes like this. Split the switch, a swing bridge between two selves, a rabbit hole condemnation traveled upon realms uncharted. Tiny tortoise savoring a savior sangria, tossed and turned in three pills and a shot of chamomile. Knocked down the handheld cards of roses bled into streams of dreams in between. Aluminum fillings picking up signals from alien cobwebs cluttering the back of a twofold mind. Tea time for our alter egos dancing upon penguins and merry-go-rounds, a cliche of shrubbery, burrowing the wayward moles to dens of once upon a broken time, trampled paths seen with the curve of the crossed eye, the sounding board of a beheaded and the graceland of a queen's magenta footstool, mushrooms sipped in cosmic incantations to reconstruct the correlation between cracked coconuts and corridors of personality, while dear Alice swings the cable in the elevator, riding a Cheshire grin of crowned lampreys, hobbled and hobnobbing, end poem.
Oh, Pam. As always, this is stunning. Thank you so much for this. Jeremy, would you start us off with your thoughts on it?
Abso-freaking-lutely. Pam, as I get more familiar with your pen, I love it when you let go, because when you let go, it's right at my path, and you let go on this one, and you just let yourself play with the words, and I love it. I love when you do that, because you do it so well, and I can tell when you're doing it. Tiny tortoise savoring savoir sangria, toss and turn, and there's three pills on a shot of chamomile. The alliteration and the word chamomile and how you did that. You're partying with this poem. And there was another, what was the other one that took me aback? Gosh darn it. There's another one before I go to my last comment. Dag nabbit. Magnetic full stool. I don't know. I love the fact that you had so much fun with it, Pam. And there's a time when poets really have fun with words, and that's what I try to do, it shows. And I love the fact that you did that so much in this poem. I like what really struck me when you were reading it, and I think you did it on purpose, is you isolated the word between, because I know that you're into format, and the fact that there's that little pause between the thoughts. I thought it was a very, very cool stroke of connection in what you were doing in this whole thing. But the fact that you danced through this whole poem, people that love words as much as I do love when other poets do it. So I'm smiling the whole time you're reading it, and just know that I'm a big fan. No bullshit. This is a great poem, and I really dug it.
Thank you so much.
Oh, absolutely. This is a stunning poem. And, I mean, Pam is and has been one of my favorite poets for a while, because you just have this way with words that pulls us in. But furthermore, the story is fantastic. You start us off in Wonderland. And while it is wonderful and magnificent, and there is this party and this idea, you actually bring us down the rabbit hole with that between. When you said cracked coconuts and corridors of personalities, I can't help but think about a head wound, if you will, and the way in which the mind is altered with that trauma. Here is Alice, in reality, swinging upon cables in an elevator, thinking that she's dangling over a rabbit hole, only that truly is going to be her demise. It speaks to the way in which the mind works when we are so wrapped up and encompassed with the trauma and the workings of the brain, and not really even understanding to this day how it truly works, how our personalities are formed, how our memories are stored, how we perceive reality. And I even think of there's a few TikTokers. There's one who has schizophrenia, and when he's having an episode, he will look at his phone because he might be seeing things, but they won't show up in his phone, and that's how he knows that they're not real. But here is someone who's given into that, someone who's gone down into the path of Wonderland that now leaves them hanging to their detriment. And even the idea of the duality of the personality, not just in the mental state, but even someone who feels like they are so out of control, to be contrasted against the Queen of Hearts, who is so grounded, who is able to be head and command and do as she wishes, when in reality, Alice is stuck in this place that is vastly out of her control, to the extent that she cannot even control her own mind. That would be appealing to be drawn to, and it speaks to that fictitious character that is created, who feels like they are out of our grasp, because in many ways there is that inner wish to be like them, to be back in control. And so I think that this poem speaks deeply to that, to the way not just we lose our mind, but even the way that we might perceive evil, because it feels like it is out of our grasp, even though that is where we wish to be sometimes. It's a beautifully dark piece that I think also makes us speak into our inner selves and question if what we perceive as evil is truly evil, or just our darker wishes coming to the surface. Just a stunning write, my dear. Thank you for sharing this.
Well, and thank you very much. And I've put your poem up as the last poem of the night, so go ahead and give the read for us, please.
All right. This is a pre-written poem, but I thought it fit the topic nicely. So this is called Metamorphosis of Loveness, of Loveness. Within the emerald shadows of the coppice, she rested her peripatetic life, bottled in a hovel hidden out of sight. how apropos the contraptual rain falls upon the roof, ruminating on horse-drawn carriages and taffeta gowns, the inept nature of fumbling men in pursuit of finding a prince, tears of yesteryears and the vertiginous fall of time, pattering the dress and fading beauty, leaving naught but the haggard husk of opportunity missed and the emergence of a corrupted queen. End poem. And Pam, could you leave comments on this one?
Absolutely, and that was a wonderful read. And Jeremy, your thoughts on Victoria's poem?
I love that we're ending with both of you guys. I mean, you guys both knocked it out of the park. Victoria, this is a great poem. I like the fact that there's a timestamp on it, and I like how you put the timestamp on it because you don't – it's not blatant. It's with description, which is so incredibly cool because that's what poetry should be about. And it's and it's most obvious in the second, and it's subtly well done in the inept nature of fumbling men in the pursuit of finding a prince. I love the fact that that time stamps, right? Because that's talking about what we, or me, let's stick with me, what me would understand is how hard it would be with courtship in the past, with dealing with all of the accoutrement that would go on with all of that. And how you do that is really sly. It's subtle and it's sly and it's, I don't know. I dig it. And then moving on, what you did with language, very similar to what I just said about Pam, I really dig it when a poet is into the language and they're eaching words. And when I say eaching, they're specifically picking words because not only because of the phonic sound, but also the visual placement of it. And I think you both have done that. And I just get all giddy because I read it over and over, and I get kind of lost in your guys' lines. I think you both did an excellent job. And, Victoria, this is a very cool poem. I enjoyed it 100%.
Thank you so much, Jeremy. I really appreciate that.
Wonderful comment there, Jeremy. And I have to say, Victoria, this is beautiful. You have, first of all, the title, Metamorphosis of Love Missed, the idea that the opportunities we missed changes us. And there are wonderful lines in here. So I really like Tears of Yesteryears and the vertiginous fall of time and the inept nature of fumbling men in pursuit of finding a prince. In that line there, there's just to me some wonderful tidbit of humor tossed in there. I really appreciate and enjoyed that. And then the ending where it says optimist and the emergence of a corrupted queen. This really fit very well with tonight's topic. And I like how it becomes about, you know, that woman who has had enough and comes out the other side, the corrupted queen. So just an excellent write all the way through and very well done. And go
Thank
ahead,
you,
Victoria, yeah. And wrap up the show as you see fit.
Absolutely. Well, thank you first and foremost to Jeremy and Felon for calling in. We do always appreciate you guys being able to come in, share your thoughts on all the poets, even share your work. And thank you, Pam, for hosting this with me tonight and, of course, to all the poets that read our work. We do have some really, really awesome stuff that's coming up that I'd like to highlight really quickly. Of course, we have Hearts of L&P. That's going to be on Sunday and then, well, Monday, late night, after midnight, Monday, technically. And then, of course, on Thursday, there's going to be Strange Magic After Midnight. And if you are keeping track of the contest going on in 2 weeks, we are going to have a show on seriality. It's going to be our bi-monthly-ish seriality show that's going to be looking at the last words of people who were put to death for murder. There's some really fun, dark humor in there. There's some that's a little bit more poignant. So definitely check it out. Pam is going to be hosting that with me and Rex, and I'm super, super excited about it. And Pam, do you really quickly want to tell us what you've got going on?
No, I'll just say head over to my page, check out my contest. There's plenty going on.
All right. Well, thank you guys for joining tonight. Thank you, Pam, for being an amazing co-host. And until next time, good night.